with Liberty Insurance. Car insurance up for renewal in the next 30 days? Visit libertyinsurance.ie to find out why we are different.
Warm and sunny for the rest of the evening. Humid tonight with lows of 15 to 18 degrees.
Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
But a big thanks to the two Johnnies for entertaining us this afternoon. It is Friday, September 8th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, the Rugby World Cup kicks off tonight, so we'll be joined by Munster coach Mike Prendergast to preview the opening match as host France face off against New Zealand. Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan are standing by to chat Euro 2024 qualifiers. Jane Mangan has all the latest news ahead of the Irish Champions Festival. And Greg Allen is at the K Club on day two of the Irish Open. As always, if you want to have your say, send us a text on 51552 or tweet us at Game On. 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. Good evening. Great to have your company in this sunny Friday evening. Hope you're enjoying the sun. Alan Colley, you were out enjoying the sun. You're having a swim earlier, I believe.
Yeah, Shane. Yeah, sure.
Look, making the most of it.
How could you not enjoy that weather? It's absolutely fantastic, so it is.
Absolutely.
And luckily enough, yeah, I have the sea on my doorstep, so I'm lucky in that regard.
You're blessed. Swimming away all the worries of the world after the worries of last night.
That was disappointing, yeah, but we will get into it obviously in our chat later on, Shane, but I wasn't really expecting much, and those games against France, I know we put up a good fist for that home, but those games are not the ones that are going to define Stephen Kenny. They're just on a different planet altogether compared to what we are.
Absolutely. And you're excited for the Rugby World Cup, no doubt, as well.
Yeah, I'll be tuning into that. Not the biggest rugby fan in the world, but I will watch.
Hence why I'm just throwing the grenade at you.
I will watch these games, and I have huge respect for them because they're obviously very good, and I like that manager I mentioned you before, Andy Farrell. So, yeah, are they the kind of things I should be saying? I am very genuine when I say that. I do like the manager, and yeah, hopefully they do well, but I think tonight the first match is... could be a final, really, couldn't it?
Yeah,
like, it's incredible to open the tournament with those two.
Going to be an absolute cracker, and hopefully there's good news for Irish rugby and indeed Irish football over the weekend, both tomorrow and Sunday. Alan, as you mentioned there, we're going to be chatting soccer very, very shortly, but first we're going to chat rugby. But even beforehand, a couple of news headlines. One big, big news headline is that 36-year-old Galway woman Siobhan McCrone is Ireland's newest world champion. She won gold in the lightweight women's sculls final at the Rowing World Championships in Serbia this afternoon.
US and Mexico continuing to push hard, but it's a lost cause for them because Siobhan McCrone has gone to the head of the race and is sculling on strongly. The Irish crowd cheering on the 36-year-old from Clare Galway. They're watching in from Clare Galway and they're proud too in the Tribesman Rowing Club. Siobhan approaches the line now with great confidence. She has pulled clear of the field, and the lightweight women's single sculls world champion is from Ireland. Siobhan McCrone, back after a timeout from the sport, is crowned the world champion in Belgrade. The tricolours are raised, the crowd in the stand cheer her home. What a performance. In second place, it's Mexico. United States have took third, but there is our world champion.
World champion. You're smiling.
Yeah.
I know it's tough out there, but how are you feeling right now?
Good. I only really came back to proper training winter of this season, so it's a good run. It's been a good comeback.
It has been a fantastic comeback. You've had a bit of time away from the sport, and to come back and produce what you did here over the course of the last couple of days, you know, what does that tell you?
It was worth coming back. I joined up with the squad in Cork and the first week of May, and I think I've gotten about 15 seconds faster since, so I'm on a good speed improvement curve, so hopefully I can keep that going and not get injured or sick or have any issues next year.
Talk to me about the course here today, because a lot is made about its conditions. Like your last 500, you really, really put the build in there, but prior to that, how tough was it?
Well, we all have to row in the same conditions anyway, so it's more that the race just takes longer. I've always been very willing to go out in very rough conditions because the other option is having to do erg, and I'll avoid doing erg if at all possible. So for me, it's, and as well because I've been rowing for so long, I have a lot of experience in the rough conditions.
so I won't get as stressed if something goes a bit off. I mean, I was having to pull myself back into my lane twice, pinballing back and forth down the course. So it is tough conditions for steering, but everybody else has to row in the same conditions. So it's not really that big an issue.
Well, a great story. Very well done to Siobhan McCrone. 22 years after Ireland's Sinead Jennings did it first in the lightweight single sculls. So it is great news. Good news for Irish rowers continue today with the men's double of Dara Lynch and Phil Doyle qualifying for the Paris Olympics, with the women's pair of Zoe Hyde and Alison Bergen joining them as a fifth Irish boat to qualify for next year's Olympic Games. So great news for the Irish in the water.
Game on.
Rugby.
But now it is time to chat rugby, because the Rugby World Cup kicks off tonight. France versus New Zealand. And of course, Ireland play Romania, I should say, in their first game of the World Cup tomorrow, 2:30. France-New Zealand is on RTE television this evening. And a little bit earlier today, I spoke to Munster coach Mike Prendergast, and indeed a former coach of Racing and Stade Francais. And I began by asking Mike what he's hoping for in tonight's big match between France and New Zealand.
And a good open game, which I've no doubt we will. You know what? You look at it and you think about the game, and straight away, just, I suppose, you think of two players that jump off the page straight away, and the type of game that both teams are wanting to play. Damien Penno and Will Jordan, you know, just going up against each other. I think that's a fascinating battle, along with others like Aaron Smith, obviously, and probably the greatest player at the moment in DuPont. So there's just so much to look forward to. You know, the French have been building for this, as I said, for the last 4 years, and they've got a lot right. New Zealand, I suppose, on the other hand, have had challenging times. Maybe the consistency hasn't been there, but you know that come World Cup, they're going to turn up. But look, I think it'll be an open, very... there will be nerves, for sure. It'll be warm. There will be mistakes. You know, they're talking about, can the French, you know, take the pressure? It's obviously a World Cup at home. It's probably the most pressure you're going to feel. But I suppose you look back as... The backbone of their team, Toulouse, they've been very successful over the last number of years. A lot of them playing together. They're comfortable with each other. But look, this throws up, I suppose, an even more bigger challenge. And yeah, huge excitement for it.
Bernard Jackman was on the show yesterday, and he kind of mentioned anyone to feed off that energy, to feed off that crowd, it will be the French, because they play off that emotion. So is it as much about facing the All Blacks, but also managing the occasion And playing the occasion as well, considering you're the host nation?
Yeah, there's a bit of everything, I think, there. You're right, Shane. There will be that huge expectation, I suppose, because of what they've done over the last 3 years. And, you know, in World Cups gone by, I would imagine French would have looked at the All Blacks in terms of, you know, they're going to be incredibly hard to break down, which they will be. But, you know, maybe they're not looking at them as... I suppose, as previous, you know, and probably concentrating more so on themselves, and that reins everything in and allows you really focus on yourself. But there's going to be, I think, you know, from, as I said there early on in the show, that from living over there the last number of years, I lived there during the Soccer World Cup as well, and they saw, I suppose, the kick that it gave from winning that. They managed this, you know, so there is that hope, there's expectation, but I think it's a really good game for them to go into and start out, and you know, and as you alluded to there, Bernard is dead right. From he'll obviously know from working over there, when they get to that emotional spot and things are falling for them, they can be very, very hard to claw back, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how New Zealand counteract that.
Well, speaking of emotion, coming from New Zealand then, considering not only the defeat to South Africa, but the manner of defeat as well, is this the worst time to be playing New Zealand? They're going to, like, a bit of a wounded animal, and they're going to come out all guns blazing.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's hard to know. I'm not sure, as they said, they are the team they were maybe going back 4 or 5 years ago. You know, they've been mixing and matching with a bit of selection as well. I think Jordy Barrett not playing in the midfield in terms of, you know, I would imagine they'll want to put a bit more width in their game in terms of who they're playing against with the power of the French team. So I think as him, as that kind of, that extra link man, he will be a big loss. But look, they have the talent. We know it. I think, you know, it goes back again to winning collisions, ruck speed. Two teams would be looking for that. You know, you look at the French team and you think of Sean Edwards, and, you know, I'm sure all he'll be talking about is winning those collisions, slowing that ball down and not giving them front foot. Because when they do, you know, you've a passing nine, a nine that's stuck to ruck like Aaron Smith, and Mwanga outside him that can create stuff if allowed. But yeah, I just think emotionally the French will be there tonight, and I can see them coming out the right side of the collisions, and I think it'll tip the balance in terms of the speed of ball that will allow New Zealand probably not get the ball they want.
Are you going with a French win?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Will it be close though? Because I think the last five meetings, the narrowest margin was 13 points. Will it be tighter, or will France kind of push on near the end?
No, I'd imagine it'll be tight enough. I think it'll be tight up to 60 minutes. You know, as I said, there's a lot of expectation on the French. It'll be interesting how they you know, counteract that. I think they do have the characters. I know from coaching over there and current coaching certain individuals that play with France, someone like Ntamack, he will be lost in terms of he's a very, you can tell about him, he's a very calm character, along with being a world-class player. But the other side of that, you look like a guy like Jalibert. I'm very excited to see how he gets on. He's been unfortunate over the last number of years. He made his debut very young as a playing with France, probably in an era where they were just about transitioning. Did his crew shit and did it again, and has missed a couple of seasons in terms of being able to get a run in it with Bordeaux, etc. But he's, in terms of talent, he's up there in terms of a world-class player. He's an awesome player, so it'll be interesting to see how he manages his game, because he's a guy that will go for things, DuPont inside him. But yeah, I think in terms of, it probably comes down to that bench that I was speaking to earlier, and saying that, you know, you look at France, they've been quite hit over the last number of weeks with Paul Willemse, Jonathan Danti, another big player for them, big day player, big game player. He showed that with La Rochelle. You know, Gelonche is out and Cyril Bailly. So what it has is a knock-on effect then to your bench, because those bench players are starting. I probably think it's going to be small bit closer than if you'd asked me maybe, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. I still do see them creeping through though.
Okay, so it'll be interesting to see. That one kicks off at 8:15 this evening, and it is a perfect way to start the World Cup. Ireland get their campaign off tomorrow at home to Romania. First, Mike, I suppose, what stood out from you from the team news? Obviously, your coach with Munster, so must be nice to see Keith Earls get a start. Tadhg Byrne at six, interesting call as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one that stands out. Tadhg at six and Joe McCarthy in the second row. Joe, incredibly good player, young lad, really, really abrasive. I thought he showed up very well, the opportunities he got. So I suppose that's the kind of the standout, and obviously delighted to see Earlsy in there. And it's a strong side, very, very strong side going into your first game. I think it's right. I think in terms of, you know, you talk about Andy and his coach staff, how technically they are good as coaches. But, you know, you look at them over the last number of years, how well everything is planned. And they haven't got much wrong. And I think he's got this one right as well. You know, it's great to see Johnny back in there. Needs that game time. You know, it's I just see a quite a heavy win for them, to be honest. You're just looking at Romania and even their pre-season warm-ups games. And you can't go with that fully. But, you know, they were beaten at home, I think, by the USA, who are not even going to the World Cup. And Italy and Georgia put 50-odd points in them. So, look, we hope that, in terms of what they're looking to get out of it, obviously performance, result, guys come through uninjured, and you know, looking on to next week. But I do see a quite an emphatic win there.
You share Bernard Jackman's optimism yesterday. He's already nailed his colours to the mast. Ireland for the World Cup, job done.
Yeah, look, it's going to be Ireland. For myself, it's kind of sitting on the fence a small bit in terms of Ireland, South Africa and France, but the way Ireland play, you know, again, I spoke about it early, we'll always talk about set piece, etc., but I just think that ruck speed, if we can get it, we've seen in the Six Nations against very, very good teams, we've seen New Zealand, you know, teams struggle to I won't say struggle to live with us, but we fire shots, we cause problems, we'll score tries, you know, so I wouldn't be far off Birch there, to be honest with you.
To continue that unbeaten run, though, it's ridiculous numbers. Or perhaps we could do a South Africa and lose a pool stage game and still go on to lift the Webb Ellis.
Yeah, that's absolutely, anything is possible. And that's the beauty of this World Cup. I suppose, look, it's very challenging, competitive, our side of the draw. But I do think it'll stand you in the long run in terms of the you know, if you get into quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals, that, you know, you've went through those hard games and those hard challenges. I suppose even from my own perspective, looking at how we ended up at Munster last year, you know, I still say about going out to South Africa, playing those tough challenges was something that helped us at the back end of the season, you know, towards kind of semi-finals and finals. And I think being in this group, it's, as I said, it's very challenging, but, you know, if we're good enough to beat them, we're good enough to go on and win it, you know.
Well, hopefully Ireland will go on and win it, starting tomorrow against Romania. Twice I've mentioned they're playing at home, so I'm obviously expecting a big Irish crowd in France tomorrow, so hopefully they come out on the right side of the result. The reason that we had to pre-record the chat with Mike Prendergast is because Munster are in pre-season action against Leinster this evening in a blistering hot Musgrave Park, and it is currently 7 points apiece. Scott Buckley went over for Munster, and then Jason Jenkins replied with a try for Leinster. Kieran Frawley added the conversion, so 7 points apiece. That one kicked off 18 minutes ago at 6 o'clock in a very warm Musgrave Park, and it's going to be very warm at the Rugby World Cup in France. And World Rugby have confirmed that there will be water breaks because of the heat. And James Ryan was on media duty today, and he spoke about the difficult conditions that Ireland will be playing in.
Yeah, I think so. We've had some good sort of heat exposure throughout the summer in terms of we had a training camp over in Portugal, which was great for us. It was a huge block of physical work done over there. And then we were over in Biarritz and trained hard there too. So I'd like to think that we've gotten maybe more used to the heat. You can't hide from it. We've talked about it a little bit this week. You know, it's kickoffs at 3:30 and it's probably going to be the hottest part of the day. But, you know, for us, you know, it just can't be an excuse. We've got to be able to manage the heat. And that's definitely the expectation from the coaches as well.
Okay, Sinead, for rugby, we're going to be chatting soccer next. 2FM. Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Alan Colley is still with me in studio. Fergal Brennan is on the line as well as we chat football. Gents, obviously we're going to talk about Ireland. The news headlines today coming from the Ireland team is that forwards Sinclair Armstrong and Jonathan Afolabi have been called up to the Republic of Ireland squad to face the Netherlands on Sunday at the Aviva Stadium. Ireland manager Stephen Kenny has moved to replace Brighton and Hove Albion striker Evan Ferguson, who pulled out of the squad earlier this week due to injury. And of course, Will Keane suffered an injury and he's gone back to his club to recover. No update on Enda Stevens, who was an injury concern as well. He went off at halftime. Alan, obviously, you know Jonathan Afolabi very well. Mm. League of Ireland. Good to see a League of Ireland player in a squad as well. But also, you witnessed Sinclair Armstrong in the flesh as well.
Yeah, it's a great story, I think, Shane, for both of these young players. Obviously, Afolabi had his time over in the UK and things didn't work out for him. He was in Scotland with Celtic and came home and trying to revive his career, really, I suppose. And it started quite slowly for him. But in the last probably 10 to 12 matches, he's lit the league up, really, and he's been on an unbelievable run of form. I think he's 11 goals in 27 matches for Bohemians as well, but a lot of them have come, as I say, in that period in the last 10 to 12 games. So it's a brilliant story for Jonathan, and hopefully it'll give him huge confidence and obviously to kick on further with Bohemians and maybe further afield, because I still feel as though he has the potential to go back across the water. He has all the attributes as a centre forward. The other lad, Sinclair Armstrong, as well, only starting out his career, but he's established himself as the main centre forward at QPR as well this season. I think he scored earlier in the year against Cardiff. But funny enough, I was over at a match in QPR last year, Shane, just taking a game in, and he was playing, and we met him after the match as well and got a photo with the young lad. And I've always kind of watched out for him since, because he was very, very raw, big, strong, powerful young lad, but very, very raw in the game. And he's obviously gone from strength to strength. And I actually read an interview during the week where he spoke about the manager. He attributed a lot of his success so far to Michael Beale, the previous manager, and now since Gareth Ainsworth has come in as well, they've given him a lot of belief in himself, because he struggled with that, and he said he was quite shy, and he was almost just happy to be in and around the squad, but never felt as if he belonged. And they were obviously feeding him that kind of belief and instilling it in him, and he feels a lot more at home now. So the fact that he's, after getting called up to the senior team as well, I don't think Jim Crawford would be too happy, but that's the nature of, I suppose, the 21s, and they're starting out their campaign tonight, and Jim of course will only wish the lad well. Whether he features or not, who knows? Because, like, if you make the comparison with the other lads in the squad, Connolly obviously came on last night, but he's playing every week in the Championship with QPR. So I would have no qualms whatsoever about throwing him on maybe for 20 minutes, half an hour, if we were struggling in the game and needed a goal.
Absolutely. As you mentioned there, the Republic of Ireland under-21s hosting Turkey in Turner's Cross this evening, and then they have a match against San Marino on Tuesday as well. Fergal Brennan, I suppose the use of Armstrong and Afolabi into the squad continues the narrative that Stephen Kenny is developing the Irish football system and bringing these players in to give them opportunities.
It does, and it's been a feature of both his tenure and, ironically, one of the kind of sticks that's been used to beat him with, because he obviously is quite favourable to mention in the amount of players that he's given debuts to, and the amount of young players that he's brought through the underage systems, and obviously the connection with his time as under-21 boss and now in charge of the senior team. And it gets wheeled out as much as a criticism of him as it is a positive. And it just kind of, you mentioned the word narrative there. There's so many narratives that surround Stephen Kenny, and one of the big ones would be the kind of Kenny in or Kenny out, or those in favour and those against. And the idea of blooding young players is used in equal measure by both sides, because there is an awful lot of positivity surrounding these young players that, let's be realistic, under previous bosses and other coaches that might have got the job over Stephen Kenny, they wouldn't be given this chance at senior level. He's allowed that to happen, and we've seen some bright sparks, I suppose you'd say, when you look at Gavin Bazuna and one or two others. But there's also been young players that have come in and struggled to either match expectation or make an impact at senior level.
Absolutely. It is difficult, I suppose, to predict what next for Stephen Kenny and Ireland. Well, we know in the immediate future it's Holland in Ibiza on Sunday. What are you expecting from that match, considering how yesterday went, Alan?
A tough game. I don't think it gets any easier, Shane. Obviously, when you look at the performance of the Netherlands last night, and this was a fixture, if you think maybe 4 to 6 weeks ago, and we were looking at the Netherlands form, people were thinking, oh, we could really target this game, especially at home, and pick up 3 points and catch them at a time when they're not really in good form. Then they go out last night and they blitz Greece 3-0 up at half time, I think they were. So it's not going to get any easier. We all knew how tough the group was in terms of France and the Netherlands in it, and how difficult it was going to be. So I don't think anybody was under any illusions about that, Shane. That's obviously the way it's played out. I know we gave a good fist of it the French game at home, but last night we were worlds apart in terms of the quality and the ability that those players have compared to where we're at. It was men against boys in the second half. We were totally outplayed, totally dominated. And I never expected anything from the game last night.
That would have been the case regardless of who the manager is.
100%. 100%, Shane. So I'm not here to, I suppose, analyse the game last night in a sense that, oh, we lost and it's Stephen's fault and sack Stephen or anything like that. That would have happened anyway. And I think that was going to happen no matter what in terms of the group. Where Stephen is coming under the criticism is obviously the other games, and especially the Greece one, because had we done our business in that, we'd still be very much into the group, and you'd be going into the game on Sunday thinking, if we do beat the Netherlands, we're right in the mix here. Now Stephen came out last night and said, oh well, if we all win at the weekend, we'll be on 6 points if we were to beat the Netherlands. But Greece are playing Gibraltar, they'll be on 9, so you have to give an accurate picture as well, I think, Shane.
And Netherlands will have a game in hand.
Yeah, and I just feel as though, like, here we are again in the campaign, and it almost feels as though we are kind of hanging on by our coattails, really, just to stay in the group, and we're only 2 or 3, well, we're 4 games into it. And that's been the problem with Stephen again. And even for all the people who, I suppose, have supported him, and I was one of them from day one, even the I suppose this morning, all the people that would have supported Stephen, I just think the bubble has been burst now, and you almost feel as though even his supporters are questioning where we are actually going here. And that's difficult. I wanted Stephen to do really, really well. But you look at the game last night, you're going into the game Sunday, and if we do lose Sunday, like we are out of the group, and, and the question does have to be asked after, is this his fourth campaign really? Where are we going?
Yeah, Fergal, do you think his race is somewhat ran in terms of he's blooded these players in, he's developed players, he's changed our style of football, and perhaps this campaign, it's hard to see his qualifying, so it might be time for change?
Well, I mean, there's different ways to look at this. I think to answer it in a fairly straightforward way, I think, yeah. I think even with a positive result on Sunday, chances of qualification are still relatively slim. I think if we're in an ideal scenario where win on Sunday and still manage to qualify, be that directly or the kind of complicated playoff picture, then I think he deserves a chance at the tournament, obviously. But given the fact that both of those instances are looking relatively unlikely, then I think that the decision has kind of already informally been made. And it is a difficult one because obviously people that have been positive about him will look at it and say, well, what's going to come next? Is it going to be a backward step in terms of his replacement that is appointed? Will it be another example of the bad luck that he's kind of been dealt if a manager comes in and suddenly these players who were teenagers or early 20s under him then move into their mid-20s and towards the peak of their career and they then reap the benefits of it? I think as we sit here now, I think, yeah, I think that probably is the direction that he's moving in. I don't think anyone takes any sort of positivity or pleasure in it because he's a very likeable individual. He's done a huge amount for the team, for development within both the football that they play and these players coming through. But football is a very, very brutal game and that does seem to be the way that it's going.
It pains me, Shane, to say that as well. Obviously, everybody knows how much I wanted Stephen to do well. We all wanted Stephen to do well. And that wasn't us with our League of Ireland blinkers on or that kind of thing. I felt he was the right man at the job and he deserved the chance and he would do no worse than what was there before was always my feelings on it. But I have to be fair, and I felt throughout the whole camp, throughout his whole reign, I've been very fair when he's deserved praise, I've given praise, and when he deserved criticism, they get criticism. And here I am now, I can't shy away from the way I feel about the games at the moment, Shane, and I'm looking at them obviously, and as I said, I'm not, last night there's no point in really analysing it in terms of could we have done better, or it was just, they were just much better, and that's what it boils down to. No matter what, they have unbelievable players and they would beat most countries in the world, never mind us. So,
well, how much better are Holland than us then?
So that's what I'm looking at more about the campaign, and the Greece one is the killer, and it goes back then to other games and previous campaigns where we've lost games that you would think we should be winning them, because we've always given a good account of ourselves in the games, like where we're the massive underdog and we're playing against the big countries, we've always done quite well. And then Stephen throws out this kind of stat that always the first time we've lost by 2 goals, like that's irrelevant, that does not matter. If you're losing games, it does not matter whether they're by 5 goals or whether by 1 goal. So these kind of things as well, I think, feed into then the people kind of saying, well, come on, like it doesn't really matter, you know. So at times I don't think he helps himself in the media either, and I just feel that, like, watching the game last night and just, I suppose, in terms of the hype that was there before around Stephen and the enthusiasm around people wanting him to really do well, I just think it's massively on the wane right now.
Can we get a result on Sunday? Will we get a result?
I can't see it, Shane. I can't see it, no, because I think the Netherlands, again, something not as good as France, but they have better players than us and they're a better team than us. The only thing is the fact that it could be one of those massive, brilliant Irish nights where the crowd gets behind them and all that kind of thing. But I just think, whereas before, the trajectory you were feeling was kind of people were wanting them to do well and up for the games, I just feel as though people are kind of looking at it now thinking, we really wanted it to do well, but it's just not happening. Sorry.
Ferg, would you agree? I just don't understand. Who's the best manager in the world? A Pep or a Jurgen Klopp or whoever?
Them, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? You can only work with the players.
Yeah, that's
fine.
Yeah, that's fine, Shane. That is fine. But he's worked for 4 years with the players.
But what are the expectations? Like, I mean, Greece...
How long more do you get? You can't keep going into campaigns. And as I said, the first couple of years, I was very much of the view, he's building, there's a massive transition, you have to bring through all these players, we're going to have to go through like serious pain, all those kind of phrases to try and get to where we want to. But as I said, I'm at the stage now, even after all these campaigns, and you're kind of saying to yourself, like, can we look to another one and say, oh, well, next year it's going to happen? You can't keep doing that.
So Fergal, who's going to be next Ireland manager?
No, I didn't should say that. That's not fair either, like, you know.
No, I know. No, look, he's still in a job and he's got a big job to do, and I genuinely wish him all the best as well, but it's going to be very difficult. And to be honest with you, no better man to handle the pressure, Fergal, than Stephen Kenny. We've seen how resilient he is.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point to be made. And you look at last night, it was difficult. It was a difficult watch, and it was not nice to just see how it was chasing shadows, particularly in the second half when France kicked it up a gear or two. But I think the professionalism, the commitment of Kenny and the players, you also did see a lot of that last night, because 2-0 very quickly become 3-0 against a team like that. And the heat, the pressure, the tension, you're playing away from home. Players that, let's be realistic, have had a difficult ride over the last couple of years, it would have been very easy to just switch off, not track runs, not mark people at set pieces, not kind of put in the effort that you need when you're up against Kylian Mbappe and one or two others. And they didn't do that. They didn't allow it to become the kind of pre-game narrative from certain angles, which was this could be 4-5, whatever, nil. It wasn't. And I think looking forward to the Netherlands game, I think that's an aspect of this as well. And ironically, I don't think there'll be a massive amount of changes in personnel or even in tactics. And I looked at the game last night, and there was a mirror between the game in Dublin with the idea of Ogbeni up against Theo Hernandez. And the first 15, 20 minutes, that looked to be the way that it was going again. Hernandez got himself booked, and you think, right, it worked in Dublin, do it again. But I just think the gaps are so thin in terms of the level of quality, and I look back to that game in Dublin, and it was Seamus Coleman that was firing balls up to Ogbeni, and every ball was sticking, but that's because it was Seamus Coleman making the passes, and Seamus Coleman was winning the battle with Kylian Mbappe. The players that were stuck with the task of Mbappe and Hernandez last night, and I think Alan Brown did a really good job, they don't have that quality that Coleman does. And then if Ogbeni's having to try a little bit harder to get to those passes, then he's in a more difficult position to do what he did in Dublin last night. And those things are huge. Forget about the situation with Evan Ferguson. The players that performed very well in Dublin in the previous fixture, they weren't able to replicate that last night for a lot of reasons. It was in Paris. France were better last night, obviously, than they were in Dublin. But those little gaps are huge, because Ireland don't have nearly, obviously, the level of individuals that France do, but they also don't have players that you can go do that again, because everything needs to click. And when you are missing someone like Coleman and you're missing someone like Ferguson, that's enormous for Ireland. France, and not even just France, other nations that are lower down the food chain than France can replace players, and the level of quality will drop, but it won't drop substantially. That's what happened last night. Players that are so important weren't available, and the level that their replacements were able to produce just wasn't quite there.
One area as well, sorry Shane, I know you have to wrap up, but one area, we do have good players as well, but the midfield is a major problem in my views. Like, there's the lack of quality in the midfield. Again, not in terms of what you're competing with last night, but just in general, like the defence, you have plenty of good players there playing Premier League football, lads that you could build a team around, even now the emergence of Ferguson up top. Ida did okay last night. Ogbeni obviously did well. The midfield area is a major, major problem in terms of the lack of quality.
To have a bit of adventure as well. Okay, Fergal Brennan, Alan Colley, thank you both very, very much for that. We are going to chat racing next, so stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
RTE 2FM.
Game On.
Racing.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention to racing in the company of Jane Mangan, because, Jane, it is Irish Champions Festival. What a weekend.
Shane, I had to come into the studio to join you for this because it's quite exciting. Six Group 1s, lots to talk about. And as much as the horses will take centre stage, the riders will as well, because a lot of people will flock to Leopardstown tomorrow to see Frankie Dettori in the flesh, to see Christophe Soumé on the French Ace. Actually, he's from Belgium, but he's operated in France for most of his career. And to see Ryan Moore, you know, three of the best global talents in the saddle. And they're all coming to Leopardstown, and for good reason, because the Royal Bahrain Irish Champion Stakes is worth 1.25 million. It's worth winning.
It's not bad. It's not bad money.
It's not bad money. And it's attracted a field of nine. Now, they're not just nine, right? So you start at the top of the market. You've got King of Steel, the horse that was second to second to August Rodin at Epsom. Mm-hmm. He's a shorter price than August Rodin because they have a meeting here, but they're meeting over 10 furlongs, completely different track, different conditions. And subsequent to Epsom, August Rodin has won the Irish Derby, but he has blown out completely in the King George, whereas King of Steel won at the Royal meeting and he was... I thought he didn't really stay in the King George either. He finished third, but he ran a very good race. We can see that Al Rifa is a non-runner. That was Christoph Soumian's intended ride for Joseph O'Brien, but we still got Nashua and Holly Doyle. Nashua has won three Group 1s against her own gender. She's in against Coles here, but she ran against Paddington and Mustadaff at York, and she ran with great credit when she finished second. My only concern with her is she's after being to Goodwood and to York and has had two very hard races. So John Gosden has won this four times between 1993 and 2018 with Roaring Lion. She wouldn't be winning out of turn. She's a super talented filly, and again Holly Doyle will have a lot of fans wanting to see her at the races. Frankie rides Onesto, the horse that was second in the race last year for French trainer Fabrice Chappé. This guy won the Grand Prix de Paris and he's been off for all of this season, but he came back with quite a good run in the Prix Jacques Le Marois, which was over a mile, what would have been a trip too short for him. If Frankie were to win this race on Saturday, it would be his seventh Irish Champion Stakes win, and throw in the likes of Luxembourg Alfleila and who haven't I mentioned, Spreewell. It's just a very, very good race, and if I'm honest, it's what it should be. This is Ireland's best flat race, and I hope the crowds come. And if they don't, Shane, we're on air from 2 p.m. on RT2.
Well, I tell you what, if they don't, I stick the telly out the back garden. It's the weather for it.
Oh, but you can't see the screen. You can't see. Anybody where there's a will, there's a way. Anybody trying to work on a laptop knows you can't see the screen.
But no, the crowds, if they don't be flocking to Leopardstown and the Curragh this weekend in that weather,
we've got the menu. We've got the ambiance. We've got all of the ingredients. There's literally nothing missing. In terms of flat racing, it doesn't get any better than this.
No, absolutely doesn't. But
before that, we have the Matron Stakes, the Fillies race. That's got a feel of 13. Now, while you might think, okay, it's not as a wow factor as the Champion Stakes, you've got Tahira, the filly that won the Guineas, the filly that won the Moigler last year, beating Meditate. Meditate takes her on again, but has the aid of Blinkers. Meditate was second at this meeting last year as a juvenile and went on to win the Breeders' Cup at America. So that tells you what kind of level of horse we're dealing with here, that you can finish second in Ireland and beat the best in the States. You've got Rogue Millennium, who won at Royal Ascot but is yet to win a Group 1. Homeless Songs, who's completely forgotten about after she won last year's 1,000 guineas for Dermot Wells. She's second string, Oisin Murphy on board. Wouldn't surprise anyone if she managed to win. And in the same colour as Paddy Toomey's Just Beautiful. It's just all to play for in that race. Big field of 13, and I'd imagine Gerlines would love to try and make all with Zarinsk. She's a front running filly, she likes the track, but whether she's good enough to win a Group 1, we'll find out tomorrow.
We certainly will. What else catches your eye at Leopardstown? There's Group 2 at 3:55 as well, before we get on to the Curragh, I suppose.
Yeah, Adelaide River catches my eye in the 4:30, the Kiltearn, and he was the horse that was second to August Rodin in the Irish Derby. He looks like this could be a very good race for him. Al-Azi's a good horse in there, and White Birch, the horse that was third in the Epsom Derby for John and his son George Murphy, he has a great chance. If he behaves in the preliminaries, if anybody's watching the racing, make sure you watch the preliminaries, because a lot of these horses, number one, they're not used to this kind of heat, and two, they're not going to be used to this kind of atmosphere. Now, this guy went to Epsom and he kind of boiled over. The whole atmosphere of the occasion got to him. So just keep an eye on him in the 4:30, and hopefully the whole thing doesn't go to his head. And in the 2-year-old race at 2:15, Diego Velasquez comes in here with a massive price tag. He cost 2.5 million, but also a massive reputation. He created quite the impression when he won his maiden at the Curragh, but that was his only start. I think a horse called Atlantic Coast in Formal Display will make him run. This is the race that August Rodin won last year as a 2-year-old before he went on and won the Epsom Derby. So you could just see anything in that race.
How difficult is the heat? Like, genuinely, the crowd will love it, but for jockeys and indeed the horses to contend with that, like, I know it's not the 35 degrees that the rugby players and the soccer players have had to deal with in France, but it's still very, very hot.
Yeah, so the jockeys they won't mind it because they're on and off in maybe 10 or 15 minutes, as you say. It's not like a rugby player playing for an hour or more. The horses, it can affect them, because some horses are free sweaters, which they'll drip, they'll get dehydrated, but some horses just it just the whole thing gets to them, and they sweat and they behave in a different way, and they get uncomfortable, and they maybe misbehave because they're narky, and they get annoyed with their handler, and their handler is trying to, and it's just a whole big argument then. So it takes horsemanship from both the groom with the horse and the horse themselves. My sympathy is with the groom, because they are trying to keep the horse well behaved while trying to keep themselves any way comfortable they can, and throw, you know, post race we all throw buckets up on the horse, but sure, half the water lands on them.
The unsung heroes.
Absolutely, and I've been one of them myself. I know all about it. Sometimes in this heat, though, you'd nearly take the hose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it could be a blessing in disguise. Excuse me. Okay, so that's Leopardstown. The festival continues, though, on Sunday at the Curragh. There are four group ones.
Yes, there are. So two of them are confined to two-year-old races. So Moigler is for the fillies. That's the race that Tahira won last year. This time around, there's a couple of high-profile fillies. It's not by any means a one-horse race. Ylang Ylang for Aidan O'Brien, who's got three runners in here. She's two from two, and she created quite the impression when she won the Silver Flash at Leopardstown. She beat Vespertilio that day. Vespertilio was second. She went on to win the debutante and is now reopposing. So the two of them are clashing again. Who's improving at a faster rate? Is it Ylang Ylang or Vespertilio? That's Willie McCreary and Aidan O'Brien's two. Porta Fortuna for Dunica O'Brien. He won the Albany, or she won the Albany, under Frankie Dettori at Royal Ascot. Frankie's reunited with her here after she finished second to Buccaneer Fuerte in the Phoenix Stakes. They were colts. This is her first time at seven furlongs. And Carl Burke, he's such a good record when he comes to Ireland. He brought a filly a couple of years ago called Lawrence, and she won the Matron Stakes. Well, Fallen Angel is two from three. She won the Sweet Solera Stakes at Newmarket last time. She's got Danny Tudhope on her, and I think she's got a great chance of maybe taking this prize home, albeit the home challenge is quite strong. And in the National Stakes, it's not as deep a race. It looks a little bit of a match, if I'm honest. It looks like City of Troy, currently the highest rated two-year-old in training in Europe, even though he's only ran twice. He ran in Superlative Stakes at Newmarket and he absolutely blitzed a field. He made them look ordinary, okay? Mm. And when I was watching it, I was thinking, okay, maybe he didn't beat very much. The horse that he beat 6.5 lengths came out and won a Group 2 at Goodwood next time, Hatem. So that was a good race and he made them look ordinary. So City of Troy for Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien, who Aidan is seeking his 12th win in the race, which is quite remarkable.
Just a 12th.
Yeah, and he's favourite over Buccaneer Fuerte, who's already won a Group 1. Okay, so he's already proven that he's at that level and he's not even favourite. So that's his, he won his Group 1 over 6. He's up to 7 furlongs. I don't see that being an issue. And it's a little bit like the underdog and the superpower. Adrian Murray and Robson Aguirre are the underdogs of Buccaneer Fuerte. They're taking on the superpower.
Okay, well, everyone loves an underdog.
We're all rooting for the underdog.
Except for O'Brien.
It's just good for racing, and I think even Aidan can appreciate that. And look, it'll be a good horse race between the two. You only need two to make a race, and there are other horses in the race, and Henry Longfellow is worthy of a mention as well. The Comer Group Irish St. Ledger, it's a disappointing field for me. There's only five after being declared, and I think that's a reflection on a number of factors. One, the ground is too quick for some of these horses because the heat is so intense. Mm. And two, some of these horses went to the Ebor meeting, and some of these horses have been put away for the Melbourne Cup in November, which is hard to believe because this is worth 600,000. But Kyprios, it's great to see him back because we haven't seen him since October of last year when he won four consecutive Group 1s that season. He had a near catastrophic injury during the season. He's missed out on all of his campaign and they've got him back, but it sounds like he's just about ready to start. It doesn't sound like they have him absolutely ripe, ready to run his heart out. So hopefully he'll run with credit. Mm. So with that in mind, Eldarov is the horse I'm siding with here because he won last year's Doncaster St. Ledger. He's quite a classy horse. And if he's not good enough to beat a Kyprios who's not 100%, then I'd say he'll want to be looking for another career. The other group one that we haven't mentioned is the Flying Five. That's the sprinters. Three of the last five renewals have gone for export, gone to the UK. Last year's winner is back for some more. That's Highfield Princess. She's won three Group 1s. She's won over £1.6 million in prize money, and she'll be a warm order here for John Quinn and Jason Hart. Albeit Bradzell, the horse that has won the Kingstand Stakes at Royal Ascot, last year's Coventry Stakes, Holly Doyle has a great chance of winning on him as well. He's quite a good horse. Bear in mind, it would be a momentous day if Holly Doyle won either of the races that I have mentioned, because she would become the first female jockey to win a Group 1 in this country. It has not been attempted very often because not many women have genuine chances. You know, we've had women ride in Group 1s, but not with realistic chances of winning. Both of her chances, Nashua in the Champion Stakes and Bradzell in the Flying Five, have genuine chances of winning, and that will be quite the record for her to break.
Absolutely, absolutely. excuse me. Okay, I'm putting you on the spot. So, firstly,
you love that.
It's my usual questions,
Jane.
So, it's not really putting you on the spot, considering I ask this anytime we're having a chat, to be
fair.
Yeah,
it's too fair.
But what horse or who are you most looking forward to seeing, and what is the best value bet of the weekend?
Okay, I will start with the bet. I think Lumiere Rock in the 225, the Blandford Stakes at the Curragh. Lumiere Rock has been competing at Group 1 level. She ran a Group 2 last time in France. I think that is a good chance for her to get her head back in front.
Okay.
I think Tahira wins the Matron Stakes. And the feature race of the weekend, of course it has us all talking because it is a brilliant, brilliant race. But I think King of Steel is the horse. I think he's, if anybody goes to Leopardstown, and I would implore anybody who has the opportunity to go racing this weekend to get to the tracks, because these horses don't come to Ireland very often. And neither do they clash. So that's quite unusual as well. He's a huge physical. And when I saw him at Epsom, he was 100-1 when he finished second in the Epsom Derby. He was like, you know when you hang your shirt on a clothes hanger?
Yeah.
You can see the lining of the wire of the hanger.
Yeah.
He was like that because he had no flesh. He wasn't developed. Whereas I saw him at Ascot and subsequently in the King George, and every time I see him, he's just getting stronger. So he's gone from having a shirt on the rack to having maybe a padded suit. And maybe I'll see him tomorrow and he'll be looking the real, shall we say, Rocky Balboa. But
okay,
he's just...
I'm loving the analogies, I have to say.
Yeah, but some of these, like you see the scrawny guy in school, right? But he ends up being the rugby player. But he wasn't born the rugby player. You know, he develops the muscle.
Yeah.
So this guy is no different. And I think that could be to his benefit.
Okay. Well, I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing the double-breasted suit of horse racing and everything else. Listen.
Well, I'm not going to leave that one down, am I? But I just, you know, radio, you have to try and
I get what you mean. No, listen, if anyone is tuning in, Leopardstown and the Curragh this weekend. And if not, it is on RTE. You're presenting on the Sunday,
too.
Jane?
Yeah, myself and Ruby are sharing the presenting duties this week, and, you know, what a day to be working.
Absolutely. Okay, Ruby's on the box tomorrow and yourself in the hot seat on Sunday as well.
Well, so I'll be with him tomorrow, but he doesn't really need my help.
He'll be steering the ship. And,
yeah, he'll be telling me what to do. Yeah.
Listen, Jane Mangan, thank you very much for popping into the studio. Great to chat as always. Lots more to come here on Game On, so do stay tuned.
Game On.
Racing.
RTE.
2FM.
Game On.
Golf.
Now, Greg Allen joins us from a sunny K Club on day two of the Irish Open. Greg, what has been happening in the glorious sunshine?
Yeah, 28 degrees here today. It was so warm. But we've had hot scoring as well. And top of the leaderboard, Shubhankar Sharma of India on 13 under after a 66 this morning. That was matched in terms of getting to 13 under by Jordan Smith of England, who shot a 65 to get to 13 under. And they have a two-stroke lead over Germany's Hurley Long, Ross Fisher of England, and also the Scott Jemison. So that's really the story at the top of the leaderboard. So where is the Irish challenge? Not doing badly at all. Shane Lowry, a round of 68, a couple of birdies on his last two holes. A 20-footer went in on 17, and then he almost holed a bunker shot on 18, tapped that in for birdie. And on 8 under par, he's tied for ninth place. He's just 5 off the lead after a second consecutive 68.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. Look, obviously... to birdie the last two was a little bit of a nicer finish than it was yesterday, so it just feels a lot better today, even though it's the same score. And you know, I'm in a lovely position going into the weekend now, obviously a few shots back, but I'm kind of right where you want to be. You know, get out there tomorrow and get after and hopefully shoot another good score and give us
do we still have Greg?
That seems to be an interview that was truncated off at its prime. Lowry incidentally shot a obviously the 68 that he shot, second time he said six birdies in his round in 2 days. And he really spoke yesterday about the fact that he was nervous going into this Irish Open, because there's an element of the fact that he was selected for the wild card for the Ryder Cup team last Monday. His form this season hasn't been wonderful, but he's proved here that he is playing well, and that second 68 leaves him in that position certainly to challenge over the weekend, just five off the lead. Rory McIlroy, incidentally, McIlroy shot a round today of 70. It was a dramatic finish. There was very little happening until the last three holes. But on the 16th, the par 5, it's a famous par 5 here over the River Liffey, an island green. He actually holed out with a wedge shot of 116 yards for eagle. But on the very next hole, he made a double bogey, tangled with the very deep rough, didn't get the ball on the green, then pitched short on the green and missed a four-footer in the end. So it all added up to an eagle double bogey scenario over two holes. But then he birdied the last, so he actually covered the last three holes and one under par. So McIlroy is now eight off the lead after that round of 70 on five under par. Not without a chance, of course. We know how explosive he can be in the birdie-making front. Also on five under par, incidentally, Mark Power of Kilkenny in his first tournament as a professional, and he shot a round today of 71 to go with his 68 from yesterday. And he's had one bogey in 36 holes, and he only turned pro on Monday. His first round as a pro was yesterday, which began with a birdie and finished with an eagle. So he's having the week of his life, Mark Power, on five under par, just inside the top 25. After that, on two under par, it looks as though Tom McKibben and Paddy Carrington will make the cut. Harrington shot 69, McKibben around a 70. McKibben actually got to four under but bogeyed two of the last five holes. Still, it does look now as tied 61st, both of them are on two under par, that will make the cut. And Conor Purcell is making a run at making the cut. He's got four holes to play and is on one under par. He does need to make a birdie on the way in those last four holes and make no bogeys to be around for the weekend by the looks of things. But currently, top of the leaderboard, nicely poised for the weekend, Shubhankar Sharma of India on 13 under par. Jordan Smith of England tied for the lead on 13 under par. They are two strokes clear of the field. Lowry on 8 under and McIlroy on 5 under. And indeed, Mark Power on 5 under will all have thoughts of getting into contention over the weekend.
Great stuff. Greg Allen, thank you very much. Greg will have updates on Saturday Sport and Sunday Sport on RT Radio 1 over the course of the weekend. Sinead, big thanks to Brian Moss and Ronan Lawler for ensuring this evening's programme ran smoothly. Blotted Tracy is up next with the official chart show. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Game On is back on Monday at 6 p.m. But we're going to check in with the news desk now.